Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcast of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Welcome to the show. Today is February 26, 2020. The markets, you know, weren't much happier today than they were yesterday, but they were mixed, with the Dow closing down at 26,957. Last week, they were 28,734. The NASDAQ was up at 89.80, but down from last week of 92.75, and the S&P was down to 31.16. Last week, it was 32.73. I do want to, you know, like to remind people that at one time we were quite happy that the market got up to 26,957 and 89.80 and 31.16. It all depends on your time framework. And interestingly, we are talking about time tonight, time value of money. That is our topic. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. Especially during tax season, I'm happy to take tax questions if you have them. And just as an FYI, next week, I think the topic's going to be listeners' tax questions again. I had done that last week, and we got several calls. So I thought, as things are heating up and people are getting their tax documents, they still may have more questions. So we will cover more of that next week, listeners' tax questions. But of course, this week, if you have questions, you can certainly call in as well. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So, talking about time value of money. First, I got thinking about this because I realized so many of our financial decisions revolve around this concept, but we don't always put our finger on it or talk about it or explain it. So I thought, why don't we have a little education around it? And then as we go through the show, I'll give some examples and ideas of why it's important to understand this. So, time value of money, what does it mean? And basically, if you were to look it up yourself, it's going to tell you money in hand today is probably going to be worth more money than in the future. And why is that? Well, typically, money that we have today, if we can get it to work for us, will be more worth more to us in the future than that same amount. So if someone gives me $1,000 today versus $1,000 in 4 years, what would I want? Of course, I would want the $1,000 today because I can put it in the bank, I can earn some interest, or I can invest it and make some money on it. And in 4 years, hopefully it's not no longer worth $1,000. It might be worth, you know, $1,500 or something like that. Whereas if someone gave me that $1,000 in 4 years, it would just be $1,000. Okay, time. Time passes. It's what we're doing with it. from a website called smartaboutmoney.org, which is funded by the National Education for Financial Education. And I thought, what is the National Education for Financial Education? I hadn't heard that, of that before. It was started in 1997 with the proceeds of the sale of the College of Financial Planning. But I thought, how can I explain this to folks? Googled this and this came up, and I thought this is very helpful and hopefully that you can understand. So saving and investing often are used interchangeably, but there is a difference. So this again is from smartaboutmoney.org. Saving and investing are often used interchangeably, but there is a difference. Saving is setting aside money you don't spend now for emergencies or for a future purchase. It's money you want to be able to access quickly with little or no risk and with the least amount of taxes. Financial institutions offer a number of different savings options. Investing is buying assets such as stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or real estate with the expectation that your investment will make money for you. Now, y'all might not think that over the last couple days, but I'd like you to go back and look at your statements as of December of 2018 and compare to where they are now, and you will see that over time, this could make a difference. So investments usually are selected to achieve long-term goals. Generally speaking, investments can be categorized as income investments or growth investments. Okay, so I thought that was kind of a nice way to help us talk about money in a different way, that we are saving something maybe for a particular goal, a reserve, a safety net, versus investing money. So again, talking about the time value of money, money having it in hand today versus in the future. So what is this concept of having this money? What are we doing with it? We've talked about this on the show before, the power of compounding, over time compounding. So a compounding example, and I thought this was really powerful, especially if there's young listeners on the listening tonight. The example that was given was someone taking $2,000 a year starting at age 18. $2,000 a year. So not a huge amount of money. It might feel like that to an 18-year-old, but you know, they're probably still being supported by mom and dad, maybe. So taking $2,000 and investing it at 7% a year for 10 years. So from age 18 to 28, or 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 27, to, if you have to drop a year. So age 27, $2,000 a year for 10 years, $20,000 at age 65 turns into $386,718, all with that initial investment. So what happens over time, it's earning 7%, and then that investment earns 7% the next year, and then your earnings are earning 7% again. So you're just compounding it. And to have a stark example for this other time value piece is if someone didn't start that $2,000 a year until age 31. So starting later to invest $2,000. And in this story, the person invests for 35 years. So you might think, oh my gosh, our person starting 18 only did it for 10 years and they got $386,000. Can you imagine if I saved $2,000 a year for 35 years? And when I'm 35 or 31, they started at age 31, boy, that I'd have more money when I'm 31. So what a great idea. If you invest that to age 65, you only have $295,827. It's amazing. It's amazing to sit there and play with the concept of time and the value of money and to see the power of compounding. So because the 18-year-old started at age 18, saved $2,000 a year for 10 years, and saved it until age 65, didn't take anything out at 7%, they got $386,000. The other person didn't start investing $2,000 a year until they were age 31. They saved it for 35 years, so they had a total investment of $70,000, but their money only grew to $295,000 because they didn't start as early as the 18-year-old. That's why it's very important to talk about the power of compounding and the time value of money. And we're going to talk about some of the components of it and why it's important to think about it. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about the time value of money this evening. And if you have questions, you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And I do realize it is tax season, so if you have tax questions, you're welcome to call in with those as well. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. So let's go over some terms. So to explain some of this, I found a review of the concepts of the time value of money online from Texas Southern University, and I think it explained it really, really well. So number one, what are the four basic parts of the time value of money? And the four variables are present value. The time is stated as the number of periods. We call that N when we're using our financial calculators. Interest rate and the future value. So when we're looking at the time value of money, and if I have my HP12C calculator here, which I forgot to bring, I was thinking about bringing it, I could punch in certain of these values into the calculator to come up with maybe an interest rate I need to hit, or how much money do I have today to give me this future value. It's great. This calculator can do all of these, this number crunching for us, because the formulas can actually be quite complicated. So if we have these four basic parts, the present value, the future value, the time, and the interest rate. What does the term compounding mean? Now recall, I just went over that compounding example, which I think really demonstrated the power of compounding. And basically, it's compounding means that interest is earned on prior interest available in the account. Define a growth rate and a discount rate. What is the difference between them? So you'll hear people sometimes talk about growth rates, or when you're talking about pensions, you might hear someone say, what is it discounted at? So a growth rate implies going forward in time. A discount rate implies going backwards in time. All right. And some of this is going to make sense when we start talking about some examples around the time value of money and help you understand if you're someone who's trying to make decisions about pensions to take, lump sum, pension, you know, survival rates, annuitizing things. Understanding a little bit about these concepts kind of helps if you understand these terms. What happens to a present value as you increase the discount rate? So remember, we said the discount rate was going backwards in time. So what happens to a present value as you increase the discount rate? The present value gets smaller as you increase the discount rate. What happens to the future value as you increase the interest or growth rate? the future value gets larger as you increase the interest rate. That one seems to make sense. I think it's harder to understand the discount rate going, you know, how do you calculate a present value? What happens to a future value as you increase the time to the future date? So the future value increases as you increase the time to the future. And I think that also, you know, makes sense. What happens to the present value as the time to the future value? Did I already say that? The present value. Okay. What happens to the present value as the time to the future value increases? The present value decreases as you increase the time between the future value date and the present value date. All right. So if I said $10,000 today, how much is it going to be at this interest rate in 5 years? If you make it a longer period of time, meaning you have a longer period of time to grow it, then your present value can be a smaller amount. Makes sense. Is the present value always less than the future value? Yes. As long as interest rates are positive and interest rates are always positive, the present value, well, we thought they were. Sometimes we're getting negative interest rates in global markets. Yes, as long as interest rates are positive, the present value of a sum of money will always be less than its future value. You sometimes, they give an example of someone winning the lottery and them taking an annuity where they take a series of payments. So the example is when a lottery price is offered as $10 million, but it will pay out a series of $250,000 payments over 40 years. Is it really a $10 million lottery prize? Well, the present value of the lottery is not worth $10 million then. The total payments over time are going to total $10 million, but it's not the present value because over time it isn't worth as much, all right? Because next year's $250,000 payment is not the same as this year's $250,000 payment. All right. So we kind of have a sense of some of the terms. These are concepts we use every day in our financial decisions around such options as pension elections, Social Security claiming strategies, and financing the purchase of a home. So when we... If you have available to you a pension, what we have been seeing more and more are companies offering lump sum options. So back in the day, you know, when our parents were working, maybe for, you know, corporations, companies, they may have been offered a pension as one of their benefits. And before 401ks, that is what people had, were pensions. And then as the saving option came up with a 401k where people could put money into a retirement plan for themselves, the 401k option. More employers started putting money as a match into the 401k, and we started to see pensions go by the wayside. That made the employees more responsible for saving for their own retirement rather than the employer. So, it was difficult for employers to sometimes have these pension liabilities on their books. So you saw more and more employers either moving away from pensions completely, maybe freezing pensions for current employees and not offering those pensions to new employees. And in some pensions, you don't get any option other than to annuitize. So your company might say you're going to get, you know, $1,000 a month over your life expectancy, and they might give you the option if you have a spouse to elect to have a survivor benefit. And if you have a survivor benefit, they reduce your single life benefit. So if they said, hey, you could get $1,000, but you want to have something for your surviving spouse, then maybe they're only going to pay you $950 a month. And in that circumstance, if you die, your spouse now will maybe have 100% survivor benefit, maybe a 50% benefit. There might be all different kinds of options that a survivor that you could elect for a survivor option. But what we are seeing more and more are employers offering a lump sum option. That's where when we talk about the time value of money and looking at what makes sense for you, it will depend on your circumstances. So I will try to give more of an example when we come back from this next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about the time value of money. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. But we have Walt from Bridingsville on line one right now. Hi, Walt. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
Well, I just explained I'm at a time, I'm 65 years old right now and planning on retiring when I hit 66 years in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my full benefit through Social Security. And I'm currently working, full-time right now.
Okay.
And our mother just passed away recently in October. Mm-hmm. And my brothers and sisters inherited some money that... That's where my question comes in as far as what would be the best choices.
Mm-hmm.
What I understand, and this is where it gets a little tricky, is that, I understand Medicare looks at your last two previous years of income to determine what you pay for Medicare. And if it's over, I think, $150,000, you get charged a higher rate. So
mm-hmm.
if I would take the money, add it to my income for this year, it would probably put me in that bracket. So,
okay.
But if I wait
mm-hmm.
until I retire next year, and then I take the money, it's still gonna. It won't show when they view my income for the past 2 years, but they're gonna see that when I file my taxes the following year, and then question, how much money I made.
Okay. So, Walt, there's a few things going on. Number one, depending on what you're inheriting, you might think it's taxable and it might not be taxable. So when we talk about the Medicare looking at our income, they're only looking at our taxable income plus tax-exempt interest. So that it's basically your page one income on your tax return plus any tax exempt interest to see if you go over the threshold. And the threshold, they call it the income related monthly adjustment amount. And for married filing joint, it's like if that number goes over $170,000, and I think for single it's half that. Now in the year you retire though, if your income was going to be that high looking back 2 years, there is a form that you can file with Medicare to tell them that you've had a change in circumstance and that you've retired now. So let's pretend your retirement income was enough to put you over the threshold. A lot of people don't know about this form. It's called a Medicare Income Related Monthly Adjustment Amount Life-Changing Event. It's an SSA-44, and you can complete it for a life-changing event. Now, if you're not over those, if you think you're going to be over those thresholds because of this inheritance, the kind of money that's going to be taxable from an inheritance standpoint is typically if you inherited an IRA or annuity income. And sometimes you have options on how to take that out. If you are a beneficiary on an IRA, you can if your mom passed in 2019, each of the beneficiaries can take their share of the IRA through a trustee-to-trustee transfer, and it would be titled Mom's IRA for benefit of, you know, kid. And then you can take it out over your life expectancy. That's a rule for people who passed in 2019 and prior. The Secure Act changed that for, you know, future, but for you guys, it would still be over your life expectancy. If you're inheriting, let's say, the proceeds of the house, you know, if mom had a house and she sold a house and it was $200,000 and there's four of you and, you know, after expenses and everything, let's say that was already covered, you're going to get $50,000 each. That's not income taxable to you, and that's not reportable as taxable income.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, if the house sold in the estate, if mom owned the house and it was sold in the estate, usually there's a loss because there's the fair market value is the sale price and the selling cost are a cost of the sale. And so usually there's a loss in that year on the estate. And in a final year, the estate can pass that loss to the beneficiaries. So there's a difference between principal that you're receiving in an inheritance and income you're receiving in an inheritance. So there's certain kinds of assets that do retain their income tax characteristics, and that's IRAs and annuities. And sometimes even annuities aren't fully taxable because if there was an investment by mom in that contract, and this is a non-qualified annuity outside of an IRA, if mom invested in the contract, that would be a return of investment, and that is not taxable. So, you know, it's smart that you're aware of this and you're thinking about this, and that's why you're going to be ahead of the game to make sure you're doing everything the right way so that you don't incur income tax consequences that you shouldn't. But you want to make sure if there is an IRA, you guys take it as beneficiary IRAs. You never want to take the check, you know, in hand. That blows it all up. The custodian, who, if it is an IRA, who's holding it, they should help walk you through that and make sure it's all done right. If we're talking $1,000, yeah, maybe you just, you know, cash it out. But if you're talking about significant amounts of money, you want to be really smart about what you're doing. And, you know, people sometimes react really quickly, like, we got to get this done, let's do this. And sometimes you're not making always good decisions. But so I hope that helps with understanding that maybe not all of the inherited monies are going to be income taxable. If for some reason your income does end up over the threshold, if you have a reason and it included your wages, you just need to let Medicare know, hey, next year I'm not going to have the wages, so therefore I'm going to be under the threshold. So they don't have to look back 2 years. They can look back, they can look at the current year if it is a life-changing event. And that was that form SSA-44, if you needed to fill that out. Did that help, Walt?
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, my parents lived through the Depression, and, you know, my mother, we learned, really learned how to save money to the point where, I mean, I myself, when, you know, we found out exactly what she left us, I was overly surprised, and, you know, so... And there was a lot of different things. There was, you know what I mean, the house is one thing, and a car, and then, you know, she had money that was invested, and, mm-hmm. you know, life insurance policies that most of us have. So that's what, you know, I said, right now it's like, you know, if I was a little bit younger, it would be a lot different. But at the age that I'm at, that's where I'm kind of struggling a little bit as far as what direction I want to go as far as, and I said, if I would take, you know, a clump of the money out and have to add that into my earned income, what's going to end up happening is when we get our taxes mm-hmm. done, it's going to end up throwing me into a higher tax bracket. And yeah. You know, I feared that, you know, I would get slammed with paying, you know, extra taxes.
Yeah,
That's why I thought the best way would be to take it out in pieces, maybe over a 5-year period.
Yeah.
Maybe
well,
more oh, next year when I'm not going to be making as much as I'm making now.
Yeah, you want to plan all that out. So the note on the house is I would expect that it could end up being a loss if it's through the estate. The car doesn't have any consequences. Investments, if they were in her name alone, they get a step up in basis. So the cost basis is not what she paid for it. This is assuming it was in her name. The cost basis gets a step up to the date of death value. So where you thought there might have been huge gains, there might not be huge gains at all. And the life insurance isn't income taxable or reportable at all. So,
okay.
Yeah,
let's hope.
You're going to be in good shape, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks
you too. Yep. Bye-bye. Folks, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1. It's now 6:30. Your current temperature in Lehigh Valley is 48. Tonight we're going to have showers and possible thunderstorms before 3 a.m., low around 37. And for your Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 40. Thursday night, low around 24. And leading into your weekend, Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 38. Friday night, it's going to be clear with a low around 23. And Saturday, it's going to be partly sunny with a high near 34. Saturday night, it's going to be very chilly, low around 21. And for Sunday, it's going to be bright and sunny with a high near 39. And for your Sunday night, low around 26. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Lori will write down your question, bring it in. I loved that phone call from Walt talking about what he has going on. This is where, you know, prior podcast, I've talked about the elements of your financial life, your cash flow, your investments, your taxes, your retirement planning, your risk management, and your estate planning, all those six pieces, and how something happens in one area and it impacts all these other areas. He's talking about retiring. That's retirement. He's talking about inheriting, estate issues, risk management. There's some life insurance coming through, maybe taxes. We have to understand the tax implications of all of these moving parts, cash flow. It's just amazing. It was a great demonstration of that. And also making sure, you know, I always say the most important question you ask is the one you don't know to ask. And I don't know if Walt's even listening still. I've had cases where I've seen a home is sold in the estate and, you know, the whoever's preparing the tax return just doesn't know what to do with it. Or they say, you know, oh, that was mom's house and she paid, you know, $30,000 for it. They forget that there's a step up in basis to the date of death value. That's the, you know, selling price. And then that is the cost basis as well. But then to the cost basis, we add the selling expenses like the commission and title insurance and things like that. That gives us a loss. And you can report that on the estate tax return, which is a 1041. And in the final year, that can pass out to the beneficiaries. So lots of moving pieces. You want to make sure you do things right, especially when you're inheriting retirement accounts as well. Because if you take it as a beneficiary IRA for deaths pre-1/1/2020, you can take it out over your life expectancy. If you're inheriting from someone who passed after 1/1/2020 or after, then they have accelerated the required minimum distributions to a 10-year time period. But for people who passed prior to 1/1/2020, you can still take it out over your life expectancy. We have a call on line one. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Good.
It's kind of something that got me thinking after that last caller.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the house. And when it goes through the state, there might be a loss.
Correct.
And I'm concerned because of my situation. I was going to have the house, once it's sold, of course, go to nieces and nephews.
Uh-huh.
They could share the proceeds, and I'm hoping there's going to be something there.
I hope I didn't mislead. So let's pretend a house sells for, let's say when someone passes away, the house is worth $200,000, and they sell it for $200,000. Well, we have settlement charges and things like that when you sell a house, and let's say those are, you know, what would that be typically, $12,000? So in essence, what is left in the estate is not $200,000, it's $200,000 less the 12. I'm going to call it 10 to simplify my story. So the estate now has $190,000, and they pass it out to the beneficiaries. But by virtue of that transaction at the estate level, for tax reporting purposes, there was technically a loss of $10,000. So while the beneficiaries each get, let's say, half of the $190,000, they're also with no taxable income consequences to them, but instead they get to share in that capital loss that we incurred because of the selling expenses. So then they get a K-1 that gives them a capital loss they can use on their personal income tax return as a deduction. So those selling expenses weren't all lost for naught. Does that make sense? So they're still getting the proceeds. It's just technically a paper loss.
Okay. All right. I was worried that there were so many fees and other things that it would pretty much eat up the equity. And
yeah, no.
Not that bad, okay?
No. So I'm glad you called.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We have another caller online, too. We have Richard from Whitehall. Richard. Did we lose Richard?
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Richard?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me still? Hey, Richard, why don't you try calling back again, okay? Because I think we got cut off. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And it would be great if you could call back. Sorry about that. And I hear the phone ringing, so hopefully it's Richard calling back. And they will let us know what line. Are we line one or line two?
Line one.
Okay, Richard, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, there we go. Hi, how are you? Sorry about that.
Hi, how you doing? First of all, thank you so much for for your information and how professional you are. It's a great learning experience.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. How can I help you?
Well, my question is this: my grandkids are being with us for the last since they were born, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter always put them in her income tax. Now, last year she did not work at all, and she moved out of the house. So, me and my wife, we're thinking about putting them in our income tax because pretty much they live with us and we take care of them.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter last year did not work as much. I think she only made maybe less than $2,000 for the whole year. Since she is not with us anymore, what is my chances of me putting my two kids, my 5-year-old and my 1-year-old little girl?
Yeah.
As, we're the grandparents, but I don't.
So to be a dependent, they have to be a qualifying child or a qualifying relative. And I opened up my book really quick just to see if I could make sure that I could do this quick enough for you. The taxpayer is not another's dependent. So it sounds like if the kids lived with you for the whole year and you guys were financially supporting them, then it doesn't sound like they could be your daughter's dependent. Younger than the taxpayer, let's see, live with the taxpayer more than half the year. So they've lived with you more than half the year, correct?
Correct.
They are not providing more than half their own support unless they're like a model or something. So they're not earning money at this point. They're not filing a joint return and not be a qualifying child of another taxpayer with a higher priority. So it sounds to me like if they lived with you for the whole year and you're providing more than half their support and their mother is not, I would say that it sounds to me like you probably are the ones who can claim them.
Okay.
So there's a relationship test, age test, residency, support. And it sounds to me like you probably meet those. Now, you know, you probably want to talk to a tax professional as well, just because this is just radio and it's educational. But I'm leaning toward that could make a big difference for you on your return.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. That's very clear.
Very smart of you to think that through and check that out. So good luck, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Love the questions tonight, my favorite part. And I love tax questions, too. And, of course, next week we are going to do listeners' tax questions as well for the whole hour. So make sure you're working on your returns this week. And if you have questions, give me a call. Tonight, I just put a focus. I have to come up with a topic each week, so thought I'd mix it up a little bit. Had never talked about the time value of money other than throwing out, you know, the power of compounding from time to time. So in talking about the time value of money, we do understand the power of compounding. A lot of times people benefit from when they go to work, and if their employer has a retirement plan option and they start putting a little bit money into their retirement account, they set it and forget it. They don't realize they're even doing it. They're putting money into it. That is a great way to do it. You start getting your money growing, and then that growing money starts growing more, and that's compounding. So you're earning money on the money that you're earning. You're making your money work for you while you're working so hard. We also, in talking about the time value of money, and growing is interest rates, but it's also time passing. So before we took some of our calls, we were talking about pensions, and I wanted to kind of give you an example that there are employers who have in the past provided a pension for their employees, but over time that pension liability became such a burden to manage as people have lived longer and it's harder to fund it. So a lot of employers don't even offer pension plans anymore. They switched over to 401k plans and allowing the employee to put money in and maybe perhaps giving a match. Some employers even pulled away from doing matches, but still offer the 401k to the employee. So the pensions are kind of going by the wayside, but there's still a whole group of people who have pensions available to them. And what we're seeing now is employers don't want that burden on their books anymore. So they're offering lump sum options. And what that means is they say, hey, instead of us paying you this monthly amount for the rest of your life, and maybe the rest of you and your spouse's wife, if you're married, that could be a long period of time. Instead, they say, let us pay you this lump sum. Then you're off our books. We don't need to worry about funding this anymore. Now you're on your own and you're going to fund it, you know, use the money and spend it however you want. So this lump sum option can be very valuable to you. So when we talk about the time value of money, remember we're looking at present value, future value, a period of time, and an interest rate. So you can take an Excel spreadsheet or some kind of calculator and say, if the pension administrator is offering a pension amount of, you know, $260 a month for the rest of your life, but in lieu of that, you could take a lump sum of $64,000. How do you make that decision? How do you know which is the better option to take? You can put it into a formula and calculate it, and it might show that if I elected $260 a month and I only lived 10 years, that might not be such a good deal because I would not get back the what would have been that lump sum value, the $64,000. So if an employer is offering you $64,000 lump sum, that's our present value. if I'm getting a monthly amount over time of $260, I might say, I know I'm going to live 10 years. I know I can invest it and make 4%. Is that going to be worth it? Is my $260 a month over time going to be the equivalent to this $64,000? And if it's not, and it's much, much smaller, it's better to take the $64,000 lump sum. So there's formulas that you can use to calculate that. When interest rates are low, the calculation for the lump sum ends up being much, much bigger. That is the concept of the time value of money. So if the discount rate, the interest rate to discount to the present value is much, much smaller because we're in a low interest rate environment, that lump sum has to be a lot bigger. That's why lump sums look very attractive today. But there are a lot of other factors that you have to consider when you're trying to make a decision about whether or not you take a lump sum or a monthly pension. And again, not every employer offers this, but if they do, it's something that you need to do your homework on. When we come back from the break, I'm going to explain some of the other considerations that you have to think about before making a decision one way or another. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY. Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11 offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here at WDIY 88.1. I love this station, and I hope our listeners love this station too. And I hope you let everyone else know too that you love the station. Podcasts of prior shows are available at wdiy.org under Public Affairs, and you scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and there's lots and lots of topics. So if there is something that you have, you know, going on in your life and you think, gosh, I wish I knew a little bit more about that, maybe we've done a show on it. And if we haven't done a show on it and you'd like us to cover it, you can certainly send your ideas through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm always looking for ideas for shows. So thank you for listening and participating in that way. So talking about time value, the phone number again, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Time value of money, pensions. So this is this is really important for people who have pensions and have the option to take a lump sum. It is very important to do your homework and do the calculations. Some of the considerations when you're thinking about a lump sum versus the monthly amount would be your cash flow, your heirs, like if you have beneficiaries, if you have a surviving spouse you have to worry about, your longevity, how are you with spending? I mean, if you're someone who, you know, blows through money if someone gives it to you, then taking a lump sum might not be a good idea for you. But if you, you know, are disciplined and, you know, you have people who might be relying on you, the idea of the lump sum could look very attractive. Some pensions, if you elect to annuitize them, if it's over your single life and you die a month later, the present value of that future stream of income that you have worked all those years to earn is typically gone. So single life, you live for 1 month, it's gone. It's done. If you have an option for a survivor benefit and something happens to you, Generally, you're taking a little haircut on the benefit for yourself during your lifetime to provide a benefit for your surviving spouse. How much of a haircut you take depends on what survivor option you elect, which could be 100% survivor, 75%, 50%, whatever the plan allows, and they'll give you illustrations of that. There is also more and more I am seeing options for what they call a term certain. So if I elect to have a monthly pension, $500 a month, for a term certain of 10 years with my spouse as the beneficiary, then I would get $500 a month for 10 years. If I lived 30 years, I get it for 30 years. But if I die after 1 year, then my beneficiary would continue to get it until that 10-year period. But if I get the pension for 9 years and 11 months and I took a term certain of 10, then I only get, my beneficiary would only get one more payment, all right? So sometimes people think term certain that it's they who get the 10 years after, you know, the pensioner died. No, it's the 10 years total combined. So with a lump sum, if you elect the lump sum, you now have that money and have control over it. And for me, that is so hard to resist. So in the example that I had mentioned earlier, employer provides a $260 a month pension, or I can take a $64,000 lump sum. If I pass away and take the monthly amount, my survivor gets, you know, 100%, $260 a month. Well, what if they die in 10 months? That's $2,600 they got, where I could have had a lump sum for $64,000 and might have been able to provide that to my beneficiaries. And if I don't need that money and I can invest it, chances are I might be able to invest it and make more money than that monthly pension ever would have given me. And again, there's formulas you can do to calculate that. So you're playing a little bit of time against this and interest rate against this. And that's where time value of money comes in. You can say, you know, to someone who's advising you, well, if I took the lump sum, what kind of interest rate would I have to get if I wanted to provide myself that $260 a month benefit and, you know, for the rest of my life or for X number of years because I'm going to live longer. So lots of interesting pieces to that. Bottom line, the takeaway is if you're someone who has the option for a pension and you haven't taken it yet and you're getting close to retirement, you have to make an election, you really want to ask for an illustration of all of your options. If you have a spouse, you want to make sure that they know that you're married. I've seen that where we get illustrations and it shows a single life option because they never notified their employer they were married. So you want to make sure you're getting a proper illustration with an example retirement date. So the retirement date could be, hey, what if I want to retire next year? The retirement date might be, I'm going to retire in 3 years. It kind of helps you prepare. You want to get those options and then run the numbers on a lump sum if that is an option for you and understand the factors to consider. Where else we see time value of money? Social Security claiming strategies. So for Social Security, bottom line, years ago I had someone come on from Social Security and they said, Social Security makes some assumptions about our life expectancy. And based on that life expectancy, if you claim early at age 62, you're claiming for a longer period of time. So they give you a haircut. You have a smaller benefit because you're going to be taking it longer. As someone who would claim later, which means they're going to get a higher benefit, but for a shorter period of time. And all things being equal, if you both live to the exact same life expectancy, you should be kind of true on each of the scenarios. Okay, so smaller amount, longer period of time, bigger amount, shorter period of time. if we all live to our exact life expectancies. So this is where we talk about the time value of money. Time, do we have longevity on our side? Is that going to make a difference? But I did find an article which was really intriguing to me that someone had done some research on this. It was the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. And they talked about doing a study on this and what kind of earning growth you can expect. And they said that higher earners are more likely to claim later than average, and that they also live longer. And I thought that was interesting. And it said that at the simplest level, under the current adjustments, lower earners claim early and are overcharged for the privilege because they give a bigger discount to the people who claim early. And it says higher earners claim later and are rewarded roughly correctly. So this research showed that lower earners usually collect earlier, and there's a discount on that. But lower earners also don't live as long. So therefore, they're taking more of a discount than someone who, than the extra benefit someone who lives longer is getting. Anyway, hard to explain. I found it fascinating. I'll have to do a show on it some other time. But Social Security options claiming strategies also play with time value of money. If you are someone who isn't going to need the money from Social Security, but you're eligible and you're going to start collecting and you invest that money, it might not make sense to wait you can wait until age 70 and then you get really the maximum benefit. If we're not factoring in growth rates on that, then it might make sense if you collect early, if you're not going to use the money, if you're going to invest it, at what kind of rate would you invest it, that it might make sense to collect earlier than you might otherwise think. When we run these illustrations through, Social Security claiming strategy calculators, it will typically say waiting till 70 is always going to give you the biggest benefit. From a dollar standpoint, it could give you the biggest benefit. But if you, again, are considering, what you're going to do with that money and invest it, then it might make sense to collect a little earlier. So that is something that needs to be reviewed. Let me quickly talk with just the couple minutes that I have left about mortgages and amortization. So when we talk about mortgages and we hear about amortization schedules, for people who might not know what that is, it's basically, what the bank is going to give you or calculate. And they're going to say, if you buy a house and you take a loan on it, you are going to pay interest over time. They will project what that will look like. So if you have a 30-year loan, $200,000 30-year loan at 4%, they run the amortization schedule, and at the bottom you're going to see the totals, and it'll tell you how much you've paid in interest for the 30-year period, and it'll tell you how much you've paid in principal, and at the end of the 30 years, your mortgage will be paid off. And you thought you had and I'm going to make this up because I didn't run an amortization schedule. You thought you had a $200,000 loan, and the totals say that you paid in, $375,000. And how did that happen? Well, the time value of money, when you borrow and they're charging you interest, you're not just paying back the principal, you're paying back the interest as well. And in the early years, you're paying a lot more toward the interest than you are the principal. So you have much larger portions of your payment going to interest than to principal. Sometimes people will think, let's lower our payment. And that's great. And we can afford this house if we lower our payment. But you have to recognize the more you lower your payment, the more you're actually going to be paying over time, because you're going to take you might take longer to pay back that loan. If you do it over 30 years versus over 20 years, that's why sometimes you can get lower interest rates on borrowing when you're taking it out for a shorter period of time. So something to think about when you're going to borrow. Now, at the same time, let me add, we're in a very, very low interest rate environment right now, and it might make sense to use some leverage. And if your investments are making more money than it would cost you to borrow, I always say you're most powerful when you have enough money to pay off the mortgage, but use the leverage of borrowing to kind of get ahead a little bit. All right. So lots of information tonight, and I hope some of it was helpful. I really appreciate the calls tonight. They were great, and talking about things that I really like. Time value of money, I think, is very hard to explain, and I felt it was hard to explain tonight. So I hope it helped a little bit. Next week, we are going to have listeners' tax questions. And I think that we're getting enough questions about that, that it would be helpful to give you another opportunity to do that. And you can send those ahead if you want through yourfinancialchoices.com or just call next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners.